You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jason and Jamie. This is episode 216. And we're going to continue on the discussion we started last week on the topic of masculinity and biblical masculinity. What is it? And last time we talked through the two sides or the two misuses of masculinity, the very macho man and, of course, the very feminine man, and really spent some time on both of those pictures in our society and why those pictures are not good. And we left off at the very end of last episode, just about to turn the corner, looking at what are the pitfalls? What are the pitfalls that result when we go for this worldly view of emasculated men or go for this overly macho man? What are the pitfalls that so often accompany that? And I think the reason it's an important, you know, piece of this discussion to tackle, Jason, is you look at some phenomena like, this issue. One of the kind of driving reasons this topic is in the news is because of a guy named Andrew Tate, who's a social media influencer, and of course presents a very masculine man kind of masculinity that is very much not in line with scripture, right? So while there's some truth there, there's also a lot of untruth associated with it, a lot of distortion of God's good design. And one of the comments I saw as somebody was, you know, thinking through this on social media is they were asking the question, why? Why would men be drawn to something like that? And it does really illustrate this particular topic really well. You know, why is it that men are drawn into these various traps of all kinds? I think the simple answer, you know, to really get the discussion going is to say that when we pervert the good design of God in any way, or the opposite, when we deny the good design of God, right, there are aspects or characteristics of that we don't want, then what ends up so often happening is we end up gravitating towards some counterfeits or some sin or some pitfalls that ultimately become massively destructive to not just us as men, but also to everyone around us as well. And that's where this idea of toxic masculinity, and like we talked about in the first episode, we're rejecting that term or that concept. There's either masculine or there's not. Toxic is just the perversion of the good. That's not its own category. It's not masculine if it's a perversion of God's good design. So, Jason, what do you see as those common pitfalls, and what really drives people into them?
I think what's powerful is obviously the influences that are going on in our world, our cultural influences. I think your family upbringing is going to have a tremendous influence on how you think about masculinity. Obviously, if you've seen good examples of godly men in your life who are leaders, who are men of integrity, who are faithful, and who love their wives, spend time with their children, are diligent, hard workers, all those qualities that we see in biblical masculinity, then you will not have a negative outlook on masculinity, right? If you've seen those good traits lived out before you in flesh and blood, then you're going to be drawn to that, and you're going to want, as a man, you're going to want to look like that. I think of that statement that Paul makes to Timothy about, you were a son to me in the faith, and I think that what that tells us is the relationship that Paul, who was a single man, had to Timothy was not just on the level of, I'm going to be your buddy, or even just, I'm going to be your mentor and teacher, but I am going to live out before your eyes an example of godliness, Not to puff myself up, Paul's very clear, he recognizes he's a simple man, but to show you what true masculinity looks like in the everyday things of life. And because we see from the book of Acts, they spent so much time together, and, you know, no wonder Timothy's always being mentioned in Paul's letters, even when he's not writing to him. You get the sense that these guys had a very near and deep bond that was more like a father and a son than just buddy buddies or, you know, what today people would call maybe, we're bros or, you know, he's my homeboy. It was a godly example who looked like a father. He was a father figure, and that impacted Timothy clearly because, as far as we know, Timothy's dad was not a believer, in fact. And before that, he had female influences who were godly and good examples for him, taught him the word. But until Paul came along, he didn't really have, from what we can tell, that biblical masculinity on display. So I think that's a huge thing is, are you getting your examples from this worldly outlook that says, here's all that's wrong with manliness, here's all the problems with real men thinking they can just have dominion and stomp over others and have their own way, be basically selfish narcissists. Or are you getting your image of masculinity from these good and righteous examples in your church? Hopefully there's examples like that. And in your family as well, that would be where you hope to see men living out this calling to be disciples of Jesus Christ. So the influences around you, Jamie, that's where I see it primarily. It's really hard for people today to buy into this idea that masculinity is good when all they see is these things that we're talking about on paper. You know, if it's like, this is what a godly man looks like, and they never see a good example, they never see a man who sacrificially loves his wife, who never keeps his promises, who you know, only works when it's convenient for him, and so that it benefits him. That's what's lacking, I think, for so many people. They don't have that biblical masculine example in front of them. And so the encouragement for all men is, you know, those listening and for ourselves is that we want to be, even if we haven't seen the greatest examples in our own lives, because maybe you are one of those men, you've chosen to follow Jesus, you're in the faith, but you don't have a lot of great examples. I would say, first of all, look for them. Look for them in your church and try to follow good examples, godly examples. But also be that example for other men, because they're, I guarantee if you are a Christian man, other Christian men at some point will be looking to you to be a leader and an example to them. And so it's not really an option. It's one of those, here it is, it's thrown at you. It's who you are as a disciple. You got to be a biblical example for others, a godly example.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the thoughts that comes to my mind, Jason, well, as you were saying that, is just the concept of mirages in the desert, right? We hear stories of this phenomena. I can't say I've experienced it firsthand, but we hear stories of, you know, people in the desert that they see water that's not really there, right? And then they go and try and drink it and it's sand, you know, and they're basically just hallucinating. They're so dehydrated that they're hallucinating. And to me, that is a sense of what we see played out in culture, right? When there is that lack, you haven't seen the good, and your culture says to deny parts of how God designed you one way or the other, right? Whether to be overly feminine or overly masculine, you are more likely to settle for a counterfeit than you would be when you're not, you know, denying the very desires that God has given you or the way that you're wired. And we see this played out in so many respects, right? One of the best ways to avoid sin is to meet the God-given desire, which so often is there underneath that particular driving temptation in a God-glorifying way. And, you know, we see this played out in so many aspects. And I think, you know, one example of this, you alluded to it at the end of the last episode, but pornography and the phenomena around pornography is it's that mirage, right? It's a substitute. It offers a sense of masculinity without the actually God-given good that leads up to that, which is you pursue a wife, you love and support and care for a wife, and then get to enjoy the nakedness of your wife in that sense. And so it's like the desire underlying it, not necessarily a bad thing, but they completely skip, right? It's a complete skipping of the actual masculine design that God intends to, you know, to reach that end or that kind of thing. And you see this, I think gangs are another example of this. Gangs are that same phenomena, right? It's a desire for masculine and aggressive good, along with, I think, you know, there's obviously a sense of belonging there, a sense of purpose there, a sense of respect there, right? You have all those things. So all these different elements of God designed masculinity that are being co-opted and used for wholly immoral and godless, and even we would say masculineless purpose, right? Because just doing random violence for the sake of doing random violence, or to further a godless purpose like drug running or, you know, whatever the case may be. So it's like you see the God design or the God ordering underneath all of that. And I think the opposite as well, when you have this really feminized or overly feminized idea, like, oh, masculine is bad, aggression is bad, aggressiveness is bad, competitiveness is bad, you know, all these various concepts. And you take a guy who buys into this and believes, oh, these parts of me are just bad, and they try to ignore them, and they try to, very often those guys end up acting out aggressively in a violent way that is not good, right? Where they hurt people, because essentially they've tried to deny this wiring of God in them instead of using it or pointing it for noble purpose. And so they very often end up becoming the school shooters or the people that shoot up a convenience store in a robbery attempt or, you know, something. And it's at its base, it's the deep perversion of a good God-given desire, right? Aggression is not bad, but it's intended for godly purpose.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about, we've talked about this before, but that original command, you know, in Genesis 1, God creates man in his image, male and female, he creates them, and then he's told to take dominion. And as I read that, the more I've reflected on this, I think that speaks to the image of God in man is our hunger for significance. It's our hunger for purpose and relationship and all those things. And also, it's that impact of making, or it's that that reality that we all want to make an impact on the world. We all want to make a difference in our world and be a part of something bigger than ourselves. And like you mentioned, gangs, and you know, I think of the book of Proverbs, because there is basically a dad talking to his son, and he tells him, you know, you need to get wisdom. Wisdom will love you. If you love wisdom, you're going to be. He basically incentivizes his son to chase after wisdom, because he knows there's going to be all these other temptations that are going to try to lure him away from the path of life. And wisdom will get you to life, it will get you to happiness, it will get you to the fullness of what it means to be a man. And what he mentions in Proverbs 1 is that he take care for sinners who entice you and say, hey, throw in your lot with us. Join ranks with us. And I find that to be, you know, really fascinating to think about, that this is, I think, kind of a universal thing, that men want to be a part of some type of brotherhood, some type of, we can call it community, but some type of thing where they are they are accepted, they are welcomed, they're one of the guys, and they want to be part of something bigger than themselves, like I said. And so that's why gangs appeal to so many young men who don't have fathers, because here's this opportunity where you can be a real man. You can show your guts, you can show your how tough you are, and you'll gain respect. All the while, of course, you're causing harm to others. But it's a perversion, like you said, it's a perversion of that innate desire to make a difference and to be a part of something. But I find it fascinating that that's exactly what you see in Proverbs 1. And then in other places, you know, he warns about not going near the forbidden woman. And, you know, if the Bible, and say the book of Proverbs, if the book of Proverbs was just a bunch of don't do this, don't do that, then, man, that's tough. I mean, any guy with a sex drive, you know, who's told no, 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 perpetually, like, man, that's like, what do I do with all this? But instead, he doesn't say no, no, no. He says, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving deer and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. That's the New King James, be enraptured. In other words, find your total happiness, sexually speaking, with your wife. Because here's the key. If you don't, if you're looking for satisfaction for these desires in any other place than the wife of your youth, he's saying it's going to get distorted. It's going to lead actually to death. You'll get reduced to a loaf of bread, is what he says. In other words, you'll be treated, you'll feel worthless, and you'll be treated worthless in the end. And that is what pornography does. It takes those God-given desires and twists them. And whereas men should be thought of using their sense of dominion for their relationship with their wife, they should be wanting to protect her, to guard her, to hear her, to connect with her at the emotional level, all those good things. And instead, they use that dominion, and so they turn this sexual desire into, oh, I just need to find pleasure and use these digitized female bodies for my pleasure. And there's no sense of emotional connection. There's no sense of how do I love, how do I protect, how do I listen to this woman. She's no longer treated as an image bearer of God. She's reduced to a digital body that you can pleasure yourself with. And that is what, well, it, not only is it degrading to the woman who's on the screen, but it is degrading to yourself. That's why if you talk to people who are hooked on porn, you get down to the stories, you will always learn that they feel empty. They feel totally empty, and sometimes they even end up being impotent. I think we've talked about this before. Because what? They've taken the gifts from the giver, but then they've rejected the giver and his design and tried to use those gifts apart from the giver. And it never works. So that's why in the book of Proverbs, and really you do see this throughout the Bible, we're never told God doesn't want you to be happy, or God doesn't want you to take dominion, or God doesn't want you to express your masculinity. It's that there are right paths for all of those things, but if you go off on the wrong path, you're going to be, ultimately, you're going to be less of a man. You're going to be an ungodly man. You're going to be a man who's reduced to a loaf of bread because you're not following the path that he's given for us, which is the path of life. And I think that's an encouragement for men who sometimes feel like they've only gotten the no. You know, I think there's a lot of people like to say, a lot of young men feel like Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, right? You read those stories, then you get the impression that these boys are kind of the outcasts in their society, because what do they love doing? They love having adventure. They love going out And in a sense, they love taking dominion of the world around them and having a good time and being boys. And yet they are constantly scorned. And unfortunately, the way Mark Twain portrays it is it's the most religious characters in those books that kind of despise them and like, oh, look at all these rules you're breaking. And what Mark Twain never experienced, probably, or very little experienced, is my guess, is that the Bible doesn't say no to God-given masculine desires that are right and true. It simply gives us a guide for all those and understanding how can a man with these manly desires actually express those in a godly way. And instead of always hearing no, and oh, I got to be reduced to basically a feminine version of myself. No, it's you got to express that in a way that God has designed, so that your desires, your heart aligns with His heart for you.
Yeah, it's definitely it's definitely a really important to this point. I think is very important because if we do not live out God's design as God intends us to, then we're going to end up in trouble. And, you know, and that's the thought, right? That keeps coming back. You're like, well, why do you see all of this? Why do you see men who beat up their wives or girlfriends or children? Or, you know, why do you see sexual conquest in the criminal sense, you know, actually going and attacking people? Why do you see, you know, all the, I think even professional athletes are a good example of this. You know, you look at the attitudes, right? They're horrible. I mean, they're terrible examples, because they throw fits, right? Anytime something doesn't go their way, they throw nasty old fits. And I was talking with, you know, I was talking with a dad actually last night about this. He was talking about how, you know, his son is very passionate about sports and loves to play them and loves to be on the teams and like whatever, but then gets so upset, you know, if they don't win or, you know, things don't go well or they don't feel like it was fair or whatever. And he's like, yeah, we've been trying to, you know, discourage that competitiveness. And I'm sitting there, you know, in this conversation. And finally I was like, you know, I don't think that's the right approach. The goal is not to decompetitize. The goal is to train it for good godly purpose, and along with that, to instill what it is to be a good sportsman as well, right? Not everything's going to go my way. And yeah, can I be disappointed about that? That's not a bad thing. I think there's a lot of times we're disappointed about things when they don't go like we hoped. And yet at the same time, still being a good sportsman about it, and even recognizing, you know, the masculine strength that is apparent in even my humility when I do let my attitude or my anger get the best of me. And then I turn around and confess that, right? And actively work to go the other direction to say, okay, wait. That was not right, right? My heart was not right. I was focusing on the wrong goal. The goal, is the character result, right? That's really the goal. That's what we were always told about sports, right? The real beauty of sports is it's a character building opportunity. And there is a lot of truth to that, right? It is, yes, it is about aggression. It is about burning energy. It is about having a mission. It is about having purpose. You know, all the things Jason was just talking about, all of that is evident in sports, right? You have all of that there. You have a goal. You have an objective. You have to protect, right? You have to protect. You have to defend. Engage in every sense. It's like, well, no wonder men like sports so much, because all these elements are there, right? You have a mission, you have purpose, you get to use your aggression for good, and also show what it is to have a good attitude, you know, good heart, good behavior, even when things don't, you know, go exactly like you had hoped. And that to me is the goal. It's like, we don't try and work out the aggression as if that was somehow wrong. Instead, we work out the bad attitude, the bad character that goes along with that, and train all of that for good purpose. So that, you know, you can still live out and walk out that design. 'Cause yeah, like we've been saying this whole time, when we don't, it's still going to come out. That's the thing, is, you know, the way God has wired us, like you're talking about, whether it be aggression or sexual desire or any of these things, right? The wanting respect, the wanting purpose, the wanting admiration, and yeah, wanting the affirmation from other men. You know, it's kind of like women dress for other women. We say all the time, right? Women do all these things and you're like, why do they do that? Men don't care anything about that. And it's like, well, yeah, it's not for you. It's for other women. And there is a masculine version of that, which is, I want the respect and affirmation of other men. And however I can get it is how I'm going to pursue it. And that's, but the other thought I had, Jason, was just thinking back to your example of, you know, living out relationship with your wife, loving, serving, caring. One of the aspects of that is when you are fully embracing God's good design, then those counterfeit alternatives actually become dramatically less appealing, right? Which is not to say like, oh, you don't have temptation or whatever, but it is to say the effect of that is dramatically lessened because you're actually getting to live out all of that in a good, godly way. You know, you had a purpose. The purpose was, well, first you had to win your wife. That was mission. That was purpose. That took aggression in a positive way. Not like you went and punched her in the face. I don't mean like that. But it takes, you know, real effort, right? Real energy, real using that masculine strength for good purpose, to win her over, right? You got to show that you're a viable spouse, which requires effort. You got to make money. You have to, you know, provide a place to live. You got to, so there's a lot of aspects to that. And then once married, then you have the continued purpose, which is to love and serve your wife. So the end result, not to say that sex is the only end, because you also have relational, spiritual. There's a lot to it, which is awesome and beautiful. But there is a sense to which, like, the nakedness of your wife or the sexual engagement is the reward of that conquest, right? When I'm using that masculine strength for good, godly purpose, there's that reward. And same thing with sports. When I'm using it for good, godly purpose, when I'm working as a team, when I'm putting all my energy on the field, you get to come away the victor some of those times. And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, as you're saying that, something else that comes to mind is that when people have a negative view of masculinity in general, find out if that traces back to their view of God. Because my guess is that if they tend to see masculinity itself, I'm not talking about, you know, bad forms of masculinity. I'm just talking about masculinity itself. If they have a negative view of it and they see it only as domineering, braggadocious, self-centered, I would venture a guess that they also tend to see God as, oh, he's the God who likes to wipe out other people, or he likes to wipe out whole nations. He's genocidal. He's very oppressive, right? And underemphasizes all the fatherly, gracious, merciful aspects of our Creator God. 1 Corinthians 11 says that man is the glory, is the image and glory of God. Man is the image and glory of God. And basically that means that man has been so designed that he is meant to, in his best, when he's at his best, he is imaging forth what God is like on certain levels. Of course, he's not going to show God's infinitude. He's not going to show God's infinite power on that scale. But he is, in a sense, when man is at his best, he is putting flesh and blood to characteristics that are true of God in a unique way. Because it's interesting, it says in 1 Corinthians 11:7, the full verse says, "For a man indeed ought not to cover his head," this is in the context of talking about prayer, "since he is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man." And so you look at it and it's like, that's interesting that that's the way it's worded. Like, man is the image of and glory of God, and woman is the glory of man. It's almost as if the whole point is, if you have a distorted view of masculinity going upwards, you probably have a distorted view of God's nature and attributes, who God is, what he's like. And because you have that distorted view of masculinity, you're also going to have a wrong understanding of man and woman's relationship, how they come together, how they complement one another. See, it's all connected. Doug Wilson, in his latest book, he has this quote. I shared this with you earlier, Jamie. He said, "Biblical masculinity is cultural gluten. Without it, the cookie just crumbles to pieces in your hand and is tasteless on top of that." And I think that captures really well just the fact that you need masculine men in order for culture to be at its best. You need, just for a real quick sketch of this. So think about the things that you most enjoy. Okay, so maybe you enjoy going to a sports game. You have to have men who are competitive to get to that level that it's most enjoyable. Did you get there by walking, or did you get there by a car? There had to be creative minds that were engineers and who thought through, how can we make this the best thing so that people can get places? There's this whole history to everything I'm talking about, but if we diminish the importance of competition, not only are we squelching a God-given aspect of masculinity that we are to strive to be good in all we do for the glory of God, not for our own glory, but for the glory of God, but we are downplaying how much we've benefited from competition. And so this whole idea that toxic masculinity, they always have to be the best, or they think they have... That's a distorted view if it's just about themselves. That's true. If the world revolves around a man, and when he comes into his house, his wife better have the dinner prepared, and if not, she's going to get a tongue lashing, and the kids better be ready to shut up and listen to him when he's giving orders, then sure, yeah, you've got a distorted image of masculinity there. But if it's, no, he's coming home, and he's going to immediately make it known how much he loves his family. His wife is not going to doubt that that he loves and cares for her, and that she is cherished by him, and that she actually loves making dinner. And some might find that a little offensive that I'm saying that, but maybe she loves making dinner for her husband because what? He loves her. He shows his love for her by going to work, by providing for her, by protecting her, by, again, cherishing her, listening to her. So why wouldn't she want to make a meal for him? His kids, what if they want to run up and tell them about their day? And no wonder, because he loves to listen to them. He loves spending time with them. And they have this positive image of masculinity in the house. And so, again, the whole family is now flourishing, because he's being a man, because he's acting in a masculine way. If he was an effeminate man and he just kind of, sulks about and says, I guess I'm just going to be the one who does all the dishes, and I'm going to complain about it. He doesn't really take charge of anything, doesn't lead in anything, and just shrinks away when there's a problem and says, okay, you deal with it, honey. You're not going to have a flourishing household with the effeminate man. So biblical masculinity really is the cultural gluten, as he said, and I think that's a great illustration for why we need biblical masculinity for all of human life to flourish.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.